shots in the dark. Me
welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show with the ceremony of a red carpet, but the only stars that we care about are the ones that Dave Meltzer is dishing out. I'm one half of your learned hosts, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, the second most electrifying man in sports entertainment, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
Oh, man, I am good, dude. I am good. I am sitting in a pretty much bear apartment. It is moving day.
An apartment made by bears?
If only. Yeah. But it's moving day. I am going to be relocating to a new facility. It's going to have some cooler stuff in there. Going to sound a lot clearer on future episodes. It's just going to be good.
I want to point out that you're not, like, in prison, not moving from one facility to another. You're not.
No.
You're doing okay.
I meant like a training facility, you know, kind of like NXT or something. But I can see how it will come across.
you're making some big changes in your life. You've just moved to a new place. I made some big changes of my own. I think maybe even the biggest change someone can make. 2 weeks ago, Chelsea and I got a Nintendo Switch. So that is a ridiculous change in my life. Yeah.
Wow. Are you enjoying the Switch?
Oh my God, it's so much fun. Nice. I'm not the biggest video game person in the world, but just as like a thing to do with another person, the Switch is so good.
Yeah, I'm not a big Nintendo person. I've always been a PlayStation man myself. But I hear the Switch has some very fun games. The new Mario Tennis game sounds really cool.
Yeah, Aces I got to play like 10 minutes of that, and it was fantastic. The Super Mario for it, Super Mario Odyssey, is really fun because a two-player campaign, and one person plays as Mario's hat, Cappy.
Which not is super... not as Luigi. You get to play as the hat.
No, you play as the hat, and it doesn't make sense to say it out loud like that, but they weave it in perfectly, and it is like certain things you can't do unless both players are like coordinating. Like you need to be able to jump off the hat
to get to certain
places and stuff. So yeah,
that's cool.
It's
a fun cooperative gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're not here to just talk about Nintendo games.
I mean, we could, but...
We could. I really could at this point, I should talk about something else. In the opening, you heard us mention Dave Meltzer, and that's someone whose name I think we've said more than a few times on the show before, but we've never described who he is.
It's nowadays it's hard to have to dive even not that deep into professional wrestling and not hear about Dave Meltzer. Most recently, there was a great episode of Talk Is Jericho, which is the podcast that, the GOAT Chris Jericho runs, where he was, interviewing Dave Meltzer basically about himself, which is, kind of different. Cause I mean, he's had Meltzer on before, but they've always talked about other wrestlers or points in wrestling. This is the first episode where he was like, Dave, tell me about you. But it was a very interesting episode, and it kind of inspired us to be like, well, you know, this would be a perfect time to kind of explain who Dave Meltzer is, why does he keep popping up in professional wrestling, and we can get into a very important aspect of Dave Meltzer, which is the 5-star rating system.
Yes, yeah, that is something that even if we haven't said Dave's name out loud, we've definitely talked about matches being a, you know, certain number of stars before. Mm-hmm. And that might just sound like us kind of throwing out a colloquial, like, you know, it's good. People like it. It's a 5-star thing. But there is an actual rating system, and it's attributed to Dave Meltzer. We'll get into whether or not it should have been, like, attributed to him. But his ratings are definitely the ones that people look to when they want to know if something is worth watching or not. Is there a good way to explain, I guess our like word of the day is Dave Meltzer.
I had originally planned it for the word of the day to be the 5-star system, but as we wrote more of this run sheet and stuff, I was like, it's actually kind of more about Meltzer. Like, the word of the day is in fact Dave Meltzer. So, I mean, break right down into it. Who is Dave Meltzer? Why do people care what he thinks?
I guess the easiest way to say it is that he is the foremost wrestling journalist, which is a weird term. There aren't many. Most of the people who, you know, I'm doing air quotes, report on wrestling are people like us who, like, I wouldn't call us journalists. We're people who are giving an opinion on wrestling. Yeah. And there are a lot of big name people who do that for a living. Dave is one of the few people who reports news, who gets sources and interviews, and has been doing this since the early 80s. He started a newsletter, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, that was a physical print piece of paper that you would subscribe to. And over the years, it's budded into its own kind of like network of podcasts and insider tips. And he is not just a journalist. He's also a podcaster. He's also he was a photographer for a while and just a general sports writer. He is a man who wears many hats, and there really isn't another person like him in pro wrestling.
Yeah, definitely not within the professional wrestling world. And I'm trying to, I guess, compare him to someone akin to the same role, but within like a different sport, different medium, or something like that. It's really difficult where you have a singular individual who kind of course, he's not the only one, but he kind of personifies the idea of a professional wrestling writer, a journalist. Dave Meltzer is at the forefront of it.
But it's weird because he's not just a writer, and he does write like columns the way that like a Rick Riley or Bill Simmons in the sports world would. Mm-hmm. But he breaks a lot of news, more like Adrian Wojnarowski, the NBA guy who always is, like, particularly the last few weeks, has been the first person to let people know like where free agents are going. That is kind of who he is as well. And he's also kind of like Roger Ebert. I mean, in the way that...
Yeah, in the ratings system, absolutely.
Yeah, the way that that was a dude who, when he was alive, his singular rating on movies would be like a thing that's held up rather than like an aggregate site like Rotten Tomatoes. People would be like, well, Ebert thought this, so I must
look at it. That's a great comparison, because it was a thing where, for like Roger Ebert, it started as... a man's opinion, like, this is just, he watched the movie, this is how he felt about it, this is the rating he gave it. And it's the exact same with Meltzer, where he began doing this rating system back in the 80s, and which actually it's important to note that he actually didn't invent the rating system. He speaks about this on his episode with Chris Jericho about the origins of the rating system. It was actually created by Jim Cornette and his friend Norm the Weasel Dooley, who they started this system where Norm Dooley would start rating matches, but in a very like almost kayfabe heel sort of way, where it was an idea that you could go out and rate a match as a very heel manner, like, oh, this sucked and this was awful.
Yeah.
Two stars or something like that.
He was more like a roaster, like a roasting comic. Yeah.
Yeah. And Meltzer says that he kind of took that system and kind of casually, you know, started giving matches ratings here and there. And then it kind of, as the years have gone on and it's taken off, and people have really started to be like, oh, well, Meltzer, you know, gave that match 4.5 stars. I should probably check it out. It's probably pretty good. People really start to respect his opinion and his eye of being able to see on the base level of what's a good match and what's not, essentially. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to go off in a little tangent about Dave's importance in the world of wrestling, because his value to the industry is very different now than when he started. You might say, like, why did there need to be someone doing ratings of all these matches? And when he started in the 80s, there were still the remnants of the territory system, and very few wrestling promotions were on TV. There was no home video yet. There was no YouTube by like a long shot. So how you learned about other wrestlers in other territories, well, there was no way to do that. So with the newsletter, Dave was the first person, the first like wrestling historian kind of, who decided, I want to catalog all of this history of wrestling that otherwise would be unknown. So I think he was a necessity in the early days, as just like, if he didn't do that, then this would be lost in time. Which I feel like a lot of the promoters didn't like, because then, you know, a tool that old promoters could have was, if something wasn't working, you could kill a character off, repackage it, bring him back, and no one would ever know, you know. But now Dave has made that impossible. To kind of finish this tangent, I want to ask you, Tyler, we both remember being wrestling fans in the pre-YouTube, pre-Wikipedia day. Were you someone who, like, when you went with your, like, mom to go get groceries, or your father, like, I'm not trying to say that the mom has to go get groceries, but for me, that was my experience. Would you go to the magazine aisle and read, like, PWI or The Wrestler or Inside Wrestling?
So I didn't do that. I think I was aware of, like, a wrestling magazine that was in the magazine aisle in, you know, your Walmart or what have you.
Yeah.
But for me, pre, you know, YouTube, pre-internet era, my go-to was whenever we would find ourselves at the mall, I would find my way into, you know, your what's it called? Is it FYE Music?
FYE, Four-Year Entertainment.
Yeah, what that store used to be, yeah.
It used to be Suncoast before that.
They used to always have, like, some great video VHS collections of, like, past pay-per-views and things like that. So that was always my go-to, is when I would be able to get into the store, I would head straight to that aisle and just, like, peruse through the VHSs, like, oh, Royal Rumble, oh, 2001, or all Survivor Series 98, something like that. So that was my go-to. And again, we've talked about on this show before, like, how difficult it was to watch wrestling back in the day, pre, you know, the internet era, almost, the idea of watching pay-per-views. If you don't have a cable box, you got to kind of figure out how you're going to watch it that way.
Well, once the internet was more readily available, and kind of the budding of me as a wrestling fan, I first became attuned to the backstage kind of aspect of wrestling by online dirt sheets. I was, you know, if I couldn't order a pay-per-view, I would go to Pro Wrestling Scoops, which is no longer a website for very good reasons, and I would hit refresh on their live text updates, and there'd be someone writing everything that happened. And if that sounds like a terrible way to experience wrestling, it's because it was awful way. So those kind of, you know, those were all playing off of the newsletters that came from Dave, and the magazines were all kind of in kayfabe at that point. They no longer are. So Dave was the first person who was reporting on the reality of wrestling. And because of that, he has this reputation of, he's not BSing you, he's giving you real information. So now that wrestling has reached this reality era, Dave is someone who now you can question what he's saying, if it is actually true, or if he is, like, now part of a storyline. We don't know for sure, which I think is really fun.
And I mean, in terms of the rating system and all of that stuff, again, it started as something that he was doing casually, but because he had done it so much and he had been in the business so long and had such a reputation, it started to become, you know, a thing where people really respected his opinion. And it's something where he'll always say himself that this is just my opinion. You know, wrestling is, it's an opinion. You know, you can love a match that someone else hates, and vice versa, and so forth. But in terms of him rating matches and giving them, you know, the 5 stars or negative stars and things like that, a really fun exercise I'm going to do here is we're going to go over some of Dave Meltzer's highest rated matches ever. Now, we're going to preface this. We've talked about this a lot. Back in January of 2017, at Wrestle Kingdom 11, there was a great match between Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada where Dave Meltzer rated the match 6 stars. Now, up until this point, most people had known the scale to be just a 5-star scale. Now, it's not entirely true. He actually did rate one match from 94 that happened in New Japan 6 stars, but no one really remembers that one.
What match was that? I didn't even know that.
That was Mitsuhara Misawa versus Toshiaki Kawada. But
I gotta go look that up.
Yeah, June of 1994, so no one really remembers that. But anyway, the Wrestle Kingdom 11 one was where he gave Omega Okada 6 stars, and he broke his own scale, and people were losing their minds about it. So I wanted to go back and kind of see 5-star or his highest rated matches pre Omega Okada.
And quickly before you hop into that, I should point out I did find a quote from Dave about exactly what makes up the rating, what he's looking for. Oh, so I think this is some nice context for, like, in theory, how he's supposed to rate it. Mm-hmm. Is that it's a work rate, which is a word that we should do as a word of the day at some point. So, like, amount of actual wrestling maneuvers versus how much time they just are kind of standing there in one hold. The variety and difficulty of the moves performed, the feud, the build up to the feud is like supposed to factor into the rating, the in-match storyline, and how they affect the wrestlers, and the overall reaction of the crowd. So the crowd is a big part of his factoring as well. But carry on, Tyler. Yeah. I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, that's good. Definitely good to know. So there's this really amazing database that Andrew found that is profightdb.com, where you can find basically just all the records of kind of professional wrestling fights. I think maybe it covers boxing as well. And
I think it has MMA there too. And that's MMA, I mean, too, another thing to throw in there is that Dave is also like a very well-renowned MMA writer well. I don't know how much news he breaks in MMA, but he like writes these grand articles about it. Yeah. If that's your jam.
But so this really helpful database that we're at, you can actually, there's a whole list of top rated matches. And again, going under the prefaced rule that we're going to do everything pre Okada Omega at Wrestle Kingdom 11. I got to scroll down. Honestly, I got to scroll quite a ways. And here we go. Okay, so in terms of the highest rating, of course, was the 5-star matches. And just going down the list from what I can right here, the very first one that I'm seeing is September 3rd, 2016. This was PWG Battle of Los Angeles 2016. This was the 6-man tag, Will Ospreay, Ricochet, and Matt Sydal versus the Young Bucks and Adam Cole. Now, just... not to say that like that's his highest match rated ever pre Omega Okada, but it's just like the most recent one pre Omega Okada that showed up. And then after that we have G1 Climax, Omega versus Naito, G1 Climax, Ishii versus Okada, Wrestle Kingdom 10, G1 Climax.
There seems to be a pattern in
Wrestle Kingdom 9, King of Pro Wrestling, G1 Climax. Okay, so what that all means is that this is just a very long list of New Japan Pro Wrestling events. The G1 Climax is the big tournament that they have during the summer. Wrestle Kingdom is, of course, their WrestleMania equivalent. And when you scroll down, you have to go pretty far, and you find that the most recent 5-star rated match for WWE was, in fact, CM Punk versus John Cena at Money in the Bank 2011.
Yeah.
But, so, of course, going down this, it this leads into our next point that we have is, there's kind of an unspoken bias that a lot of the wrestling community believes that Dave Meltzer has when it comes to rating matches, and that he loves New Japan Pro Wrestling and he just hates WWE, which and this assumption is that New Japan Pro Wrestling is always going to get a higher star rating than WWE. There's a my favorite saying about it is people love to joke. They're like, match, Meltzer gives a match 4 stars. They're like, it would have been 5 if it was in the Tokyo Dome. Which
I think we could probably pull off like a 3-star match in the Tokyo Dome.
I think we could do
the
that.
Two
man.
Of us, we can make
just
it happen.
Just that audience alone, that would be pretty good.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? That do you think that there is an implicit bias? Do you think that he actually has problems with WWE?
Man, it's tough. I don't know. Because, again, he's always prefaced that this is his ratings on matches and stuff. It's just his opinion. And the beautiful thing about professional wrestling is that there's a lot of different styles of professional wrestling. There's the, you know, your kind of quick, fast-paced, strong style that you would see in New Japan. And then WWE has always had a slower, more methodic, built for TV style, you could even say. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that one is better or worse than the other. There's also comedy matches that a lot of people, some people can't be a fan of it, but you know, that's an art form in itself when it comes to professional wrestling. And I've seen some comedy matches have been some of the most entertaining matches I've ever seen while watching yeah. wrestling. And so I think that Dave clearly has a style of wrestling that he prefers, which seems to be that New Japan Strong style, which, of course, is the reason why, you know, New Japan gets a lot higher rated matches. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's fair to say there's a bias there. I think it's a bias. I just don't think it's fair to call it a bias because it's just an
opinion. Yeah, and that's what it is. And it's funny. I think Dave probably cares less about the ratings for his matches than anyone in the world.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, I think he gets. He's like, yeah, it's my opinion. Like, you should rate matches too. But it's. I've heard a lot of people try to like goad him on Twitter because he doesn't do a whole lot of interviews. He's not really like an enigmatic figure, really. He's not like a performer in any way, but he is pretty vocal on Twitter. Like, if you tweet at him, he'll probably answer your question. And people try to goad him. Yeah, exactly. People try to goad him into being like, you hate Vince, right? Or like, does Vince hate you? And the few times I've heard him talk about it, it seems like that's not the case, that he has kind of had a working, like, on and off relationship with WWE, where if he was, like, he said in the podcast that he emails personnel there all the time to, you know, check his sources because he's a journalist, and it seems like he probably is in the ear of Triple H a lot, more so than Vince at this point. But he was someone who, you know, reported, like, real reporting on all the biggest moments in WWE's history, specifically in him talking about the trial with Vince, that he was kind of like a buddy for Vince in the early 90s when WWE was having a few sexual harassment lawsuits and steroid problems that were going on that really almost put the company under. Yeah,
and that was very interesting because he talked about how at that time he had probably the most interaction he did with Vince and WWE because they saw Dave as a way for them to get their side of the story out, which I think it just in that role, like, it shows how much they value him, you know, kind of as the mediator between him and how to get out to fans and things like that. I think that right there showed how much they value Dave and kind of his role as a journalist for them.
And I think maybe people think that there's a frostier relationship between them because Vince and Triple H and Road Dogg and other people who are like higher ups on the creative side now have been pretty vocal in interviews and on social media about not liking dirt sheets. And I think people associate the idea of like a rumor rag, like a National Enquirer of wrestling, they associate that with Dave. And I don't think that that is a fair association. I think he gets lumped in with that. So I think that there is kind of this built up idea that they don't like each other, which I do think that some of the information Dave gives is probably leaked by WWE to be like a work, so because we all think that they don't like each other.
I think
it unlocks like storytelling potential that I hope that they continue to use, you know.
One of those beautiful things about professional wrestling is, man, everything's a work, everything's a shoot.
Well, it's like I almost wish that he had a different rating system for WWE and the rest of wrestling. Because it is really hard to compare WWE and anything else at this point.
Because
of the like production costs, because of what their end goal is, I guess, like, for the market they're trying to get. Because New Japan is probably the second biggest wrestling company in the world, and they're they're not trying to get the same kind of audience that WWE is trying to get, you know? So it becomes impossible to like rate those against each other.
Yeah, and I think, again, when it comes to, like, the idea of different styles in professional wrestling, the WWE style, like, it's so drastically different. And I think people, a lot of, like, fans nowadays, they'll get frustrated when, you know, a New Japan guy comes over to the WWE system, and it's just, you know, they're not wrestling the same way that they used to, or their matches aren't as exciting as you felt they used to be in New Japan. And I think it's because, I mean, again, the WWE style, it's entirely different. It's a slower pace style, and they have to relearn how to do things. One of my favorite points to this is Finn Balor. When he first came into the WWE, he wrestled in New Japan as Prince Devitt for many years. And when he first came into the NXT system back in 2014, 2015,
seems about right. 14.
He had always said that, like, the idea of wrestling for a camera and not just the audience was one of the hardest things he had to relearn. And this is a guy who had been wrestling for 10 plus years.
Yeah.
And he said that he had to relearn, kind of, you know, where's the camera at, how I got to make sure that, you know, I'm facing the correct direction when I put a guy in a headlock and things like that. So I think it's you kind of have to relearn an entire system of how to wrestle almost. So it is almost unfair to have them rated within the same star system.
Yeah. If you will. And to reiterate a point I think that we've made before too. So, like, if you're in WWE, the number of matches that you're wrestling a year is significantly higher. So you can't afford to do, especially the New Japan style.
Yeah.
And, you know, less people. I mean, in the last 15 years in WWE, there's been a sea change in how they treat the wellness of their talent. And I think there's something to be said for, like, the number of guys who have washed out of New Japan because of legit injury. And, like, Shibata is, like, a good example of someone who, and that doesn't happen in WWE, not nearly as enough anymore, especially after, I think, draws. I think that was a wrestler who was paralyzed in the late 90s, and I think that since then it's kind of been...
And to think it's been almost 20 years since something to that effect has happened, I mean, it's...
Yeah. Well, I guess Tyson Kidd, too, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I just undid my own point, but that's okay. We should get back onto Dave. We went to a tangent there.
A little bit of a tangent. But so a fun thing that I wanted to do now, so we talked about some of his highest rated matches, which in his five-star system, but so it's also a great thing to point that, you know, when professional wrestling is good, it's really good, but when it's bad, oh man, it's really bad. And so there's been a lot of times where Dave has given matches negative stars. He's gone backwards in his system. So this is a fun little thing I'm gonna do. I want to read to you the top five worst rated matches of all time
in
Dave Meltzer's eyes.
I think so I know what number one is, and I've watched it many times.
These are all negative five stars. You can't get any worse than this. The first one is Junkyard Dog versus Moondog Spot.
Oh,
I don't even know who that is. This was at the WWF Wrestling Classic in 1985.
Did it say anything about why that was so bad? That like,
I could look into the match. Doesn't specify. On, yeah.
What was the name? Moondog Spot.
Moondog Spot. So the next worst rated one. This is a more familiar one. Roddy Piper versus Mr. T in a boxing match at WrestleMania 2.
Yeah, that. I mean, it's hard to consider.
So
that
I've never
match.
Actually gone back and watched that match. But
yeah, it's more of just a build. It's not great. I'm just looking at a screen grab of Junkyard Dog versus Moondog Spot right now.
Oh yeah.
And Moondog Spot is like it almost like Nasty Boys looking, like bleach blonde mullet, beer gut, ripped jorts kind of dude.
My favorite kind of wrestler.
Yeah, and this match seems like it's 47 seconds long. So,
wow, okay.
So I think it was probably a squash match that maybe did not go all that well.
That's fair. Well, I mean, I guess we're gonna keep moving on. The third worst rated match, also negative five stars, is Hollywood Hogan versus The Warrior at WCW Halloween Havoc in 98.
Oh yeah. This is one that is bad for a few reasons.
So I'm correct in that the Warrior was Ultimate Warrior when he came to WCW, right?
Yes, he had to legally change his name to Warrior so that he could at least have some of his character left.
So it's a funny thing to think that this match between Hulk Hogan and the Warrior that was in WCW in 98 was rated -5 stars. But these two also had a match back when they were in the WWF umbrella at WrestleMania 6, I believe? Yes.
Yes, that was a great match.
And that was a great match. That match that they had was rated 3.75 stars. Mm-hmm. And so, my, how they had fallen.
I found out something about the Moondog Spot match. That I want to read to you really quickly.
We're going to keep coming back to this Moondog Spot.
Yeah, sorry. I'm now really obsessed with this. This match had a missed top rope splash, and then after that, Junkyard Dog hit a few moves and quickly got a pin. So maybe he hurt himself on that splash.
Oh, yeah. Moondog Spot. All right, you got to end it.
Yeah. There was no referee in the match. Junkyard Dog counted the pin himself.
Oh my god. That's probably why.
Yeah, that's probably why it is that way. But I imagine it had to be him covering up for an injury. Wow. But that's really fun. Yeah.
Damn. Keep going. Only got two more. The second worst match of all time. This was the Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch, versus Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik at the Heroes of Wrestling, October 99. What?
Oh, 99. Yikes. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say 89
involved in that. 99.
That sounds like four guys who were really slow in their prime, deciding to.
And now they're even slower. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And so this brings us to the number one worst rated match of all time, and I think you already know what it is.
If it's not, then I'm going to talk about this one after. So.
Oh, no, it definitely is. This happened on August 9th, 2015. This was a AAA event, Triple Mania 23. I'm not entirely sure. This is Villano the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. So three guys, all Villano. And then versus Murder Clown, Monster Clown, and Psycho Clown.
Oh, boy. That
what's
is...
What's their faction name, the Clowns? Is it just like... Bad Clowns or something? I don't know.
I don't know. I have not watched much AAA, I should tell you. Like I haven't made the jump into full Lucha yet.
Yeah, me neither.
That actually was not the match that I thought it was.
Oh, really? You thought of a different Triple Mania one?
Well, I know. I thought of a -5-star match that he had that Dave Meltzer reported on. And I want to get the year right on this. It was, okay, it was Victory Road 2009, pay-per-view. And this was Charmel, Booker T's wife, who's not a wrestler, wrestling Jenna Maraska, who is also was not really a wrestler. She was a winner of season 5 of Survivor Amazon. She was the winner.
Yeah, I kind of recognized that name, but I didn't know where.
Yeah, she won Survivor, was on it again for their All-Star season, and then became a valet for Kevin Nash and a few other people in TNA. She was the worst reality show contestant turned wrestler, of which I can roll off a few, but she was the worst, and she was not a wrestler, and they threw her into this pay-per-view match that is just total and utter chaos. Highly recommend watching it.
I had to dig deeper. So Victory Road 2009 for TNA, this was a pretty bad card. The highest rated match we have was Kurt Angle defending the TNA World Heavyweight title against Mick Foley, and this was rated 2.5 stars.
That was the highest rated match on that. I forgot that
was
the
highest rated match. Yes,
they brought Foley back when he really shouldn't have been in the ring really at that point.
And it's also wild because this was a card that included the likes of Sting, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Booker T.
Who did Joe and Styles wrestle that they got less than a 2.5
Joe and Sting had a match that was rated 1.5 stars.
That's hurts my heart.
AJ Styles had a match with Big Sexy Kevin Nash that was also 1.5 stars.
Oh boy.
Matt Morgan had a match with Christopher Daniels that was 1 star.
Like, yeah.
Like, oh, Jesus. Early, like late 2000s TNA, man.
Yeah. The weird, now I'm looking at it, the weirdest part about that Jenna versus Charmel match is that they were both accompanied to the ring by Awesome Kong, who is, you might recognize, new wrestling fan from GLOW. Yeah, she's the welfare queen. Mm-hmm. And Sojourner Bolt was the other, like, those are female wrestlers, and they were not the ones wrestling in that match. Oh boy, what a pay-per-view. I think it's just as fun to look at Dave. Any match that Dave gives a negative rating to, they are just as interesting. Before you definitely go and say, I need to watch all the 7-star matches, go watch a few of those negatives.
But so that's real good. That is a great segue. So we've been covering the scale in like pre breaking it and what it is. So now, just to give you a quick little idea of what happened at Wrestle Kingdom 11. So this was the first meeting of Kenny Omega and at the time the IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kazuchika Okada. Kenny Omega had won the G1 Climax that previous year, which is a tournament in New Japan Pro Wrestling that basically guarantees him a spot to main event the Tokyo Dome, which is where Wrestle Kingdom happens. And he challenged Okada for the belt. And in this match, they went almost, I think it was like 47 minutes or like 53 minutes. It was just, it was like just under an hour. And Dave Meltzer rated this match 6 stars, and the internet exploded. People went crazy. He had broken his own scale. And again, it happened before, but no one really remembered that. That was back in the 80s or whatever.
Yeah.
But so he had broken the scale. And from that point on, it's the amount of matches that are rated above 5 stars are actually quite a lot. I mean, just within 2017 and 2018, like, there's been, I'm seeing 7 matches already that are higher than 5 stars.
Why do you think we're seeing such an increase of that?
And I think, to no one's surprise, they are all New Japan Pro Wrestling matches. But I think it is it's an evolution of not only the style but the business. Professional wrestling, I think it's hard to argue that professional wrestling currently has the most athletic superstars that they have ever had in the business.
Yeah.
Because you got to understand, wrestling back in the day when it started, it was more about these larger than life personalities, these larger than life physical characters, these monsters among men who could do these feats of strength and things like that. And just even within like the last, I'd say, 10-15 years, it has changed to the idea of wrestling as an art and being skilled at the actual technicality of it, which of course allows for more smaller athletic guys to do bigger flips and lucha style things like that.
I think they can just wrestle longer because they're in better shape. It's, and that, like, too, honestly, a part
well,
of it.
Also, well, I mean, if you were to debate that, I mean, you know, you have Ric Flair wrestling for an hour every night back in the
80s. Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
but also, but Ric his Flair wrestling was matches, he wasn't.
He was the small guy at that point.
He was a small guy, and back then he wasn't, you know, doing top rope dragon suplexes and jumping on heels to the outside.
Although Ric Flair's acrobatics could make just a simple like pancake or flapjack look like he takes the highest aerial bumps off of those, which always scared me because he would land on his side of his hip instead of on his back for some reason. It was really terrifying to watch. But I think part of the reason that we are seeing so many of those matches is because just people are more athletic and can go longer. It's like the natural evolution of athletics. We know much more about how to treat sports injuries now. And you know, just like in every sport except the NFL, you see this now where athletes are, you know, becoming supreme machines. I think part of it, too, is I think that Dave, he would never say this, but I think he did get a little tired of of people getting on him about the ratings and was like, you know what, I'm going to throw out a six and just kind of parody my own self and be like, it's worthless. I'm just telling you, I think it's good. You know,
absolutely. I definitely agree with that. And that's not to say that, like, you know, his highest rated matches don't deserve the ratings that they get.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, you know, I agree with his highest rated matches. Right now, literally, the top four are all Kenny Omega versus Okada. And I think it's very hard to argue that. But
I have an interesting question that I want to pose to you about Dave. So the only other ratings I can think of that hold the same kind of debate in industry as Dave's ratings are Rolling Stone's album reviews, which go up to 4 stars, right? They don't go to 5.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think they go to 4 stars. And they... You know, Rolling Stone reviews albums like the week after they come out or the week before they're on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some notorious like examples of giving like universally loved albums like 2 stars. Like I want to say that Nevermind, the Nirvana album, got like 2 stars from them on the first review.
Yeah, yeah.
And they go back in every like 10 years and do updated,
kind of give it like a reevaluation. Yeah,
they do that. So why, Dave has said on multiple occasions that he will never do that. Why do you think that is?
Well,
do you
I think
he should go and update them?
I think it would be interesting if he did it maybe with a select few. But he's spoken, yes, that he doesn't like to do that because, you know, it's, the rating that you give it at the time, you know, it depends, again, not only on the wrestling, but the atmosphere with the crowd, the storyline leading up to it, and everything like that. I think I agree with him in the sense that you can't necessarily do that because you could say you watched a match, you know, 20 years ago that you rated 5 stars, but compared to how the business has evolved today, say you were to see that again, you might be like, you know, maybe it's only a 3-star match.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, at that place, during that environment, man, that was the pinnacle. Like, that was the top of wrestling. So I agree with the idea of not, you know, backtracking like that. But it could be fun, you know, just to kind of see how your opinions have changed and things like that.
Yeah, I tend to be super into that because, you know, another thing that I obsess about is movies. And I always think that we rate movies way too fast, and particularly like I don't particularly like the Oscars for this reason, is that you go back and look at like what won the Oscars 5 years ago, and a lot of the movies you'd be hard pressed to remember what they were about.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the thing that we need the lens of time to know, like what stayed in people's minds. I don't know if we need to wait 10 years to say what wrestling matches were good. I think it's a bit easier to kind of point something out as good or bad from the beginning.
Yeah.
But I kind of respect that Dave, if he's not going to do retrospectives, at least to be like, look, this is how I felt in the moment, and I can't explain to you why I rated that now.
Definitely. And I mean, moving on, you know, this is a great way to segue into the next thing. I mean, as Dave would agree, you know, a wise man once said, wrestling is a subjective art form. And quite frankly, you know, that can't be more evident than in 2018. And if you were to ask Dave Meltzer, you know, he might be inclined to say that 2017 was collectively the best year ever for in-ring talent in professional wrestling. But if you were to ask maybe Jim Cornette, he'd probably tell you those spot monkeys from the indies already killed the business. You could ask Ryback, but you know, we'd prefer not to.
No.
So with that, we'd like to introduce our newest segment here on Much Ado About Wrestling. Will it kill the business? Basically, we're just going to run over some interesting things happening in the world of wrestling, and Andrew and I are going to try and guess whether or not it's going to work or if it's going to kill the business.
Yeah.
So first up, this one's for you, Andrew. Impact Wrestling recently signed the local hero, the prestigious one, Joe Hendry. Do you think he can make it must watch TV?
I don't know if it's gonna make it must watch TV, but I think it's a very smart signing for Impact Wrestling. To give you a very quick rundown of who Joe Hendry is and why he's notable, he is a Scottish wrestler. He's from the UK. And he has a very unique gimmick in that his entrance music and his entrance video changes for all of his big matches depending on who he is facing. And he writes and films and edits these really low budget songs that are intense diss tracks basically against whoever he's about to wrestle.
Yes.
And it really works well when whoever he's wrestling is like a very serious or like mythical hard hitting character, because Joe Hendry is a ham. He's kind of like the Weird Al Yankovic of wrestling at this point.
So I love that gimmick that he does it, because it's almost like the 2018 equivalent to me of like Rick Rude back in the day, how he used to come out with the airbrush tights. Rick Rude was a wrestler back in the 80s where he would come out with these airbrush tights that would have like his opponent's face on them or something like that.
Or his face too.
Or his face on them, exactly, yeah. And like he would always have these like amazing, like individualized ones depending on who he's facing and things like that. And it was just a great gimmick for that character. And I think this is literally the 2018 equivalent of that.
I can't stress how low budget these videos are. To give you a good example, so Drew Galloway, who you now know from WWE as Drew McIntyre, to parody him, he cut out this like paper photo of his face and made it into a mask and weared it and sang a cover of the Eiffel 65 hit Blue and changed Blue to Drew. And it works just as good as you think it would. I think that this is a great signing for Impact, and that they've had a history of signing people who became famous elsewhere, notably from WWE or ECW or other places, and they bring them in and have them do the exact same thing. This is one of the few signings that local Joe Hendry is really fun, but he isn't as well known as most free agent signings. So this could be a thing that could be attributed as like a homegrown guy if it works out.
That's what I was thinking, in that Joe Hendry, he's great, he's pretty popular on the indies, but he's not such a known name that where he'd show up in Impact, a lot of people might not know that, you know, he's coming from the UK indies. So I think because he's so great and he has such a great gimmick for 2018 audiences, I think that this is Impact's chance to almost kind of, you know, build this guy as an Impact star.
Yeah, I'm curious to, I think they're going to have a hurdle with trying to clear copyrights. If like, he's going to have to change a little bit the way he does stuff. Yeah, because
the bigger you get, that's always going to happen. So
yeah, so I'm confident in him being able to write his own music that's not just parodies, because apparently he was signed to a music contract at a major record house when he was like 17. So he has the ability to do it. I don't doubt him as a performer. I just hope that they're able to adapt that gimmick in a way that it doesn't lose what's fun about it. And I don't think that he kills the business, because he isn't really doing like insider stuff. He's just doing a gimmick that's annoying on purpose.
Yeah.
So I think that this is like, it is a modern gimmick, surely, but I think it is still in the spirit of kayfabe wrestling. So this is one for you, Tyler. WWE is launching NXT UK, as we found out at the end of the second UK championship tournament. It's going to be its own brand that's going to run its own TV show. Do you think this is a good thing, or do you think it's going to kill the business?
So from the information we've got about this, this is the first step of the NXT, as Triple H would call it, the local globalization plan. And the idea with that is that they want to start setting up individual NXT brands in different parts of the world. So you will have the main hub of NXT in Orlando, Florida. This new NXT UK brand is going to be centralized in the United Kingdom. They're going to have their own brand, own championships, own roster, and they want to do this elsewhere as well. Now, here is my thing. I'm actually going to say this is going to kill the business.
I agree.
Because I don't, this is the most akin to like monopolizing the professional wrestling world as you can get. And we've always
wrestling kind colonialism.
Of, yeah, we've always kind of thought this was happening with WWE, the idea of them expanding into India or Saudi Arabia and things like that. That the worrisome thing about this is a more concrete plan of exactly how they're going to do it. And by creating these different NXT promotions throughout the world, they can start to sign up all of the talent within these different locales. You can sign them to that very, very constricting WWE contract that doesn't allow them to appear elsewhere. And I don't see it as a good thing. I definitely don't. I think the WWE roster, including NXT and 205 Live and everything, is already bloated. They clearly are already have amazing talent. They just don't know what to do with. They don't have the TV time to do anything with them. I think I don't think it's a good thing.
Yeah, this puts us to 8 hours of WWE programming a week, assuming that it's an hour long show. And that's without the mixed match challenge, which they will do again because it did really well for Facebook. And this is without like a Mae Young Classic or any of the like special limited tournaments that they run. Like I love wrestling, and we're kind of reaching that point of the year again where we're coming back around to like the last few weeks of Raw and SmackDown have been great. But I don't need this much more content. I think it would work. It wouldn't kill the business if they were just opening up performance centers in all of these places. Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense to me. But I think, you know, so many of the UK stars that we have right now in WWE are already thought of more as an NXT competitor or as a 205 Live type person. Mm-hmm. Then it's going to become a thing of like, where do these people best fit? And it's all of a sudden, when you're dividing those rosters up, you're going to have like holes. So now you got to hire more people, which they already have enough. I think here's the thing too, is I don't believe that what they are doing right now is actually this big plan. The cynic in me thinks that they are trying to kill a few upstart British wrestling things that have TV. There's World of Sport, which is coming out soon. Yeah. World of Sport was a big wrestling thing a while ago, like many times ago for fans in England. I can't pretend like I know that much about it, but I know it is like a brand that existed. Mm-hmm. It's coming back. It's going to be on TV, and conveniently all of the base contracts for the people on the new NXT UK, they can all be terminated after the week after the initial contract for World of Sport runs. So World of Sport could just get canceled, and then the week after that, all the NXT contracts are up. And I think that is hard to ignore as a coincidence.
Yep. So I mean, it's something that I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see. And unfortunately, it's also something that there's not really much anyone can do about it. So.
Yeah. I wish them all well. I want it to work. Yeah. I don't know if it will.
And again, always,
I think this could kill the business.
More promotions, as in more opportunities for wrestlers to get paid, is always a good thing, but we shall see what happens. Next up for you, Andrew, the GOAT, Chris Jericho. You know, he seems to be straying further and further away from the WWE umbrella every day. He's the current IWGP Intercontinental Champion in New Japan. His Rocking Rager at Sea event that he's putting on is featuring stars from every company but WWE. And he's been on multiple episodes of Being the Elite, which is the Young Bucks YouTube show. Is this a good idea or is this a bad idea? Is it a good idea for Chris Jericho? Is it a bad idea for WWE? What's going on here?
I think it's a good thing for wrestling fans. I think it was a good idea for Chris Jericho for a while. I think it's starting to get less and less of a good idea if you put the most stock in his WWE career and legacy. Because I mean, before he went to New Japan, he had announced the Rager at Sea, and he said, you know, he tried to talk to Triple H about getting NXT stuff on there, And he said, absolutely not. So he's like, well, I'm going to go get Ring of Honor then. And he did. And then he was in New Japan. And, you know, Chris has said a lot that, like, he still talks with Vince and them. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. Go do this NXT, or not this NXT, this New Japan stuff. But I know he's also said that Vince's patience is now getting thinned out a little bit, because he's like, oh, I thought this was just going to be maybe a few matches. I think that him now having that title is starting to make the other side worry. So I think Chris is going to be at an impasse soon, where he's going to have to decide if he wants to be a journeyman for the foreseeable future, or if he wants to come back to WWE. I think this is actually great for the business, because we haven't had, since the end of WCW, really, I mean, there's some of this in Impact, but not a whole lot of of the idea of a wrestling free agent. And that was part of what made the 90s so exciting, and we haven't really had it. So at least we have that with Chris right now, that he is like an assassin.
Yeah, it makes it interesting, definitely. And I think, it's curious to see how far Chris Jericho is going to push this. And another thing that he said, like in interviews and stuff, that, you know, the first New Japan appearance that he had at Wrestle Kingdom 12, he ran by Vince McMahon. He got the okay for it. And with, you know, New Japan is booking shows in the States now all the time, out in California, things like that. So Jericho has said, you know, that he still feels, he still is loyal to the WWE. And in order to, and by that, he's not, he says he's not going to book any appearances within the States. He'll go to Japan to wrestle for him. He'll do it elsewhere, but he's not going to do it within the States. And I think once that could be very well be the tipping point, is when, if we see a point where Chris Jericho accepts, you know, a IWGP Intercontinental title defense in the Cow Palace or something, I think it's pretty obvious right there what's happening. But also, you have to think, like, Chris Jericho, yes, he's wrestled all over the world. He wrestled in Japan before he was ever even in the WWE. But he's in his mid to late 40s. He is Chris Jericho. He's an amazing wrestler. He's still keeping up with the best. He just had a 5-star match in January. So, but you got to understand, like, his days as an active wrestler are numbered. And does he want to finish his career as this traveling journeyman who can kind of go out wherever, or does he want to finish it in the WWE, where he built a 20-year, you know, career, where he built the name Chris Jericho? I think it's interesting to see.
I think there's a potential for a big falling out, or for a big breakthrough, in that I think if he said, you know, like, I'm only going to wrestle in North America for WWE, well, then maybe we see a chance of him defending that title on, like, a one-off match on WWE programming, you know, like that. I could see that happening. It would be a huge, like,
that'd be a
first
huge
time thing. But I could see if crazier things have happened in the past few years, or I could see, here's the thing I'm worried about, and then we can move off this point, is so now there are people from Impact on the Rager at Sea.
Yeah,
because
so
Chris
he literally has Ring of Honor, New Japan, and Impact stars all wrestling at this event.
Impact, I think, is the problem. Don Callis, who now is kind of running Impact, is best friends with Jericho in real life. I think if the result of the Rager at Sea, if there's any camera footage of Chris Jericho that appears on Impact television, I think that is where WWE will start to have a problem.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah, so I think that will be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. So we got one more thing to talk about, if it's killing the business, and this is a more broad one for you, Tyler. Roman Reigns, is he going to kill the business?
Oh boy, how much time you got?
Not that much.
I don't know with Roman, man. I don't want to say yes, because I never want to put all the blame on the talent. Especially with Roman. Roman's problem is not necessarily him as a talent, or his ability to wrestle, or things like that. Roman has always just been a victim of horrible booking within the WWE. And so, having that being said, I think that if Roman Reigns, as we currently know him, as he is currently written in the WWE, continues, it might just kill the business.
Yeah.
It just might. Because, I mean, you just got to look at it this way. Like, Roman has been the guy for the last 4 to 5 years. He has main evented the last 4 WrestleManias, the largest wrestling event in the world, and he's still not at the level that they want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unless you make a drastic change, that it's going to instill some excitement and some new interest in Roman as a character. Like, it's just going to be some more of the same old.
I mean, you got to get the fans to at least give him a chance, which they're not doing anymore, which is a problem. I'm kind of, I have some hope for his match at Extreme Rules against Bobby Lashley. They're both kind of like as interesting as dirt in the build up.
As they've been written lately, it's not good at all.
But I can see them having like a killer 10-minute 2 mega dudes in the wrestling ring match, but they have to not boo him out from the beginning. You know.
Which is going to be the hardest part is them not in the fans not immediately turning on Roman from the beginning.
Yeah.
And honestly, what we've been seeing lately in the past couple of weeks on Raw, I think there's like some hope on the horizon. Roman just in the past couple of weeks has been having he hasn't been winning his matches, which is a number one thing to note.
Yeah.
which is very different from the norm. And he seems to be going through some sort of, you know, crisis of confidence storyline, which is, you know, they've done this numerous times before with all kinds of people. But I think this pay-per-view coming up, Extreme Rules, is going to be a great testing point to see if they're actually going to follow through with some of this potentially new storylines they're telling, or they're just going to fall back on it. And that's basically just going to be if Roman wins or not. I think if Roman loses this match, we may have hope for something new. If he wins, it's, you know, same old, same old.
I think he's a liability to kill the business in this sense. You and I both went to acting school. One of the first things that you should learn as an actor, particularly if you're doing theater, is that if something goes wrong in a scene, like if like a prop takes a funny bounce, you don't just like sweep it under the rug. You actively acknowledge like, oh, this took a funny bounce, and you let it affect the story, because otherwise it's really weird.
Yeah.
Now anytime Roman comes out, he's booed to a point and booed throughout the match to the point that audience reaction of immediately breaking kayfabe is something that has to be acknowledged in the telecast.
Yeah.
And that gets old really fast. And there's not many ways to do that well without just undoing the reality of the product.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long WWE will allow that to happen.
I have to hear commentary say one more time that, oh, you know, sometimes fans will cheer who they don't usually cheer. Like, I swear.
But
to God.
I mean, I don't know what the right play for them is there. But the right play isn't to just be silent and do nothing.
No.
So they keep getting put between a rock and a hard place, and I think that's why it might kill the business. Literally,
that's a tough one. That's probably the toughest question we have here. Is will Roman Reigns kill the business?
That we will address every week on this show.
Absolutely. All right, so last thing we got for you this week, guys. We are going to hop back into Kayfabe 5000. We've put some more tweaks. You got to understand, the Kayfabe is a machine that you know, you can always make improvements to. And me and my scientists, we do our best to always give you a product that we are proud of. So Andrew and I are going to hop into Kayfabe this week. And in the, you know, spirit of learning about Dave Meltzer today, we are going to try to predict, if you will, how Dave Meltzer saw a couple matches that we have listed for each other. This could be pretty interesting. Andrew, you ready to hop into the kayfabe?
I am. I have my seatbelt on.
All right, here we go.
I wish you died in the womb!
man.
Now I'm stuck in like my seatbelt. It won't come off. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's fine. At least I'm safe.
That's okay. You know, as many upgrades as we make here, I mean, can only be so smooth.
Yeah.
But you know, we're gonna hop right into this, Andrew. I have an amazing list of matches here for you.
Great.
So I'm gonna read the match out to you, and I want you to try and predict how Dave Meltzer saw this match in the moment, in the environment. Not to say he was at the match, but when he was watching it. He could have been watching from his couch in California. I don't know.
But that is true, yeah.
First up, this was a match that happened at SummerSlam 2005. This was an amazing match. This was a match for some of the highest stakes I've ever seen. A ladder match for the custody of Rey Mysterio Jr.'s son, Dominic.
Boy.
It was Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Eddie Guerrero in a ladder match.
Ooh, yeah. I remember this match fondly. I remember the buildup for it, and it was a type of story that I feel like we don't see very often in wrestling. It was very visceral and involved the custody of a child and whether or not his dad was his real dad.
One of my favorite wrestling t-shirts of all time, I'm Your Poppy.
Yes, the I'm Your Poppy shirt. I feel like the feud may have been just so real that Dave couldn't handle it, and that actually took away stuff for him. So I'm going to say that Dave probably gave this a tepid 3 stars flat.
Ooh, that was very close. I think you were feeling it with Dave on that.
Mm-hmm.
Dave gave this a 3.5 stars.
Oh, right, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I will say that that Dominic now is training to be a wrestler. I saw that on someone's Instagram. It was him standing next to some very short guy with a face that I didn't recognize. And he was like, hey, this guy Dominic is training. I'm proud of him. I don't know why he was proud of him. I don't know who this guy was, but I'm sure the Rey Mysterio somewhere senior probably also has some interesting things to say about or junior, yeah. not senior. The Rey Mysterio junior has some interesting things to say about Dominic's foray into wrestling.
And you know, maybe one day he'll grow up to be a great wrestler and he can get a 3.5 star match in the zone.
Yes, I think he probably could. Do you want to go to your next one, or do you want to do? Okay, so I have some matches for you as well. I did a little bit of a theme, so I only picked WrestleMania main events.
Ooh.
And one of these is the worst rated WrestleMania main event of all time. One is the highest rated WrestleMania main event of all time. And one is just like another one thrown in
Rando.
There.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind as we're doing this. I wanted to start with the main event of WrestleMania 32. This is only a few years ago. This was at the Cowboys stadium, which is not the name of that stadium. but it's the really big one with the huge scoreboard video thing.
This was the one they broke 100,000 attendance. Wasn't that, this was the one?
Yeah. That was the most notable thing of this WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So this was the main event.
The flamethrower. That was the most notable.
That
thing.
Was pretty great. The Rock versus Eric Rowan match. This was Roman Reigns versus Triple H. How many stars? I remember this match. I remember dozing off by the end of it. But how do you think Dave saw this?
Oh, man. I definitely remember this match. I remember watching it live, and I remember not being too happy about it at the time. But, you know, you got to understand, this was also, you know, this was the biggest WrestleMania of all time. They broke the record. They had over 100,000 people in that stadium.
Legitimately, because we're in the kayfabe 5000.
Legitimately, over 100,000 bodies in there, whether they were in their seats or not. And, you know, I just think that maybe Dave was feeling that as well. You know, maybe he was like, hey, this is a momentous event. I'm going to give this, I think this is a good 3.5 stars as well.
You were so close. It was 3.25 stars. So it was right in there.
so close.
Yeah.
Damn. All right. Well, moving on. To continue with, I guess, a little bit of my theme is I have another match for you from SummerSlam. This one, many years before, this one took place at SummerSlam 94. Mm-hmm. Now, this was an amazing SummerSlam, if you will remember, because this one in the main event saw The Undertaker versus none other than The Underfaker. Two Undertakers.
Oh, yes, two Undertakers. It was like a doppelganger thing. It was like that movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Except one Jake Gyllenhaal was was accompanied by Paul Bearer, and the other was accompanied by Ted DiBiase.
Yes, yes, that is how that movie Enemy goes. Oh boy, I know I've seen this match before. I was 5 years old at the time. I don't remember what happened to Underfaker after that. I don't know if he had much of a career.
I don't believe we've seen him since.
Yeah. I think that Dave actually would not be able to rate this match because one Undertaker in that time period is spooky enough. But if you put two Undertakers in the early 90s in the ring, I think that Dave literally would put his hands in front of his eyes like he's watching a horror movie and couldn't watch it. So I'm going to say that the rating he gave it was a dud.
Ooh, well, you see, you would be close. He didn't give it a dud, but he also wasn't happy with it. I think you're absolutely right. I think he was a little too scared going into this match. I mean, how could you deal with two Princes of Darkness at the same time? He gave this a negative one star.
Oh, wow. that's much worse than I thought it would have been.
He did not enjoy this one.
Was that the main event of SummerSlam 94?
That was the main event. Because
God.
I think the match that happened before that was like Bret Hart or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay, so from one main event to another, this is a match that we've talked about many times before on the podcast. This is maybe the most famous wrestling match of all time. It was the premise of the recent HBO documentary. This is Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan for the title at WrestleMania 3. So this was the Irresistible Force versus the Immovable Object. This is the most famous wrestler of all time versus maybe the second most famous wrestler of all time. Certainly the only one who's been in a movie directed by Rob Reiner. So what do you think he thought of this?
Man, this was, I mean, could you think of a more iconic match? This was huge. This changed the business, you could say. And you know, maybe in some parallel universe, there was a time where maybe you and I reviewed this match and we talked about what Dave actually rated it. But yeah, you know, that's just a potential of what could have happened.
I don't remember that. I may have been drunk. So.
Yeah, if I were to guess, I think that Dave probably enjoyed this match, much like a lot of people did. You know, I enjoyed this match a lot. I think this match easily was probably somewhere around 4.25 stars.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tyler, the rating on this match does say 4 stars, but it says negative 4 stars.
Oh, this is no.
This is the worst rated main event in the history of WrestleMania.
Oh, Dave according was to not Dave. Feeling it. Dave was not feeling Hulkamania.
Yeah, Dave has been pretty critical of Hulk Hogan matches, but this is one that I feel like the build and the feeling in the building would have been enough to at least give it a positive rating.
Ooh.
But I don't know what happened. What do you think happened to Dave that day?
Dave was a Warrior fan. Dave was not a Hulkamaniac.
I mean, it was also right after or two matches after Rick Steamboat versus Randy Savage. So maybe
He could have been all starred out. He didn't have any stars left to give. That's what it was.
No, that's where they all went. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. So, you know, I kind of like this WrestleMania trend you got going, so I'm going to hop on it here.
Oh, good.
The last match I got for you here, this is personal favorite of one of mine. One of the best matches I've ever seen from one of my personal favorite WrestleManias. This was WrestleMania 21, Kurt Angle, the Olympic gold medalist, versus the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm. This was in Shawn Michaels' return, his second go-around. He came out of retirement like Michael Jordan. I would have loved to have seen a Shawn Michaels Space Jam-esque movie, by the way, that would have led into this. I just want to point out, I'm trying to get myself back in the memory of where I was, because that's how Dave rates these. he came back at WrestleMania. This first WrestleMania back was 19. Mm-hmm. And for this 3-year stretch, I think that Shawn Michaels had the best match on the card. Mm-hmm. Him and Jericho at 19 was great. Him against Benoit and Triple H at 20 was great. And then him versus Kurt Angle was great. I don't remember the build being that great for this, other than Kurt Angle singing Sexy Kurt, his version of the Shawn Michaels theme song, the Sexy Boy song. but other than that, I can't remember anything of the build. And I know it was right in the middle of the card. So I'm going to say that this was probably the highest rated match in that card. Because I think it was a John Cena main event. I think that this got a standard 4.
So this was WrestleMania 21, which, if you guys remember, this was actually a huge WrestleMania if you think about the impact that it had, because this WrestleMania was the coronation of both John Cena winning his first WWE title from JBL, and also Batista winning his first World Heavyweight Championship from Triple H.
Yes, future stars of film.
Future star of film. And so this match did happen in the middle of the card. You're absolutely right. But you got to understand, I think Dave Meltzer, you know, he must have still been pretty hyped at this point. WrestleMania was only halfway through. He still had a lot of matches to go. Mm-hmm. Uncle Dave gave this match 4.75 stars.
Wow. That's about this was the closest they got to a 5. Yeah.
That's about as close as you can get.
Wow. Is that the highest rated? No, it's not the highest rated match at WrestleMania of all time, because that's the next match that I'm going to give you. So I answered my own question. What were the, just, do you know off the top of your head what the ratings for the Cena and Batista match were?
I looked at them. I think the John Cena JBL match was 1.5 stars. And
wow.
Batista Triple H was about 2.5, I think. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
But like, I don't remember much of those matches, to be honest. I can't remember a damn thing from the JBL John Cena match.
No, neither can I.
Yeah.
I don't remember much of that WrestleMania 21, honestly, beyond that match. Was that in Chicago? Was that big time?
That was Hollywood. That was WrestleMania.
Oh, that was Hollywood. Ghost Hollywood. Yeah. Of course, because two future movie stars won the main matches.
There you go.
So now it's time, you now know that this is the highest rated match in the history of WrestleMania.
Okay.
2 stars. Yes, this is from WrestleMania 26. Ooh. And this is The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. This was the second, this is the streak versus career match. Ooh. For them. So Shawn Michaels' last match.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
This was huge. This was, I remember the build to this. I remember this match. The build was basically Shawn Michaels is now Jesus, and he is going to face The Undertaker, who is now the devil.
Yep, all white versus all black.
This was good versus evil, the light versus the dark. I remember it fondly. And I think Dave remembered it fondly very well as also. I got to, you know, this is a 5-star match. This has got to be a 5-star match.
It was a trick question. Because it's the highest rated, but it's tied with other matches. This one is also 4.75 stars.
Got him.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, and a cat just made the exact same noise that you did here, Tyler. I guess one of my cats jumped into the KFAB 5000 with us. Yeah. Yes. So there's only a few matches that have reached that 4.75 at WrestleMania. The other one came from WrestleMania 17 and was TLC 2. So Shawn Michaels is in 2 of the 3 best matches ever at WrestleMania, according to Dave.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's about time we hop out of the kayfabe.
I gotta get this cat out of here.
Yeah, that's probably not great for that system. All right, here we go. Let's get out of here.
Put that cigarette out.
It's still real to me, damn it.
We will ban you from the Summerfest.
You'll be banned from SummerSlam, is what you're saying.
SummerSlam.
I'm a slammed out.
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?
Oh, my God!
Oh, man, how's the cat doing? Is he okay?
He's still... he's fine. He's just being really loud. So I apologize in advance that you're going to hear him, but at least it will just be for the end of our show.
Okay, but make sure he doesn't give you any like open chair shots or anything.
I'm going to try to. I mean, he does like to, if you bring like a feather toy, he gets really vicious. Like he's there a scrappy fighter. Yeah. Oh, can you hear him? Is that what
I can, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So that about brings us to the end of the show. Is there anything else you want to say about like wrestling before we get out of here? Have you watched anything recently? I've been kind of happy with where we're heading.
I mean, things are, you know, we're reaching the midpoint of the year where WWE's starting to build some SummerSlam storylines, and that's always an exciting time. Mm-hmm. New Japan's always doing some very interesting things. We're about to see Kenny Omega in his first defense of the IWGP Heavyweight title. The Cow Palace against Cody. So I mean, some big things are happening. It's definitely exciting.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it much, but if you missed the pay per views last week, I recommend going back and watching from NXT Takeover. I would watch Gargano versus Ciampa. I guess three now if you include the Cruiserweight Classic was really good, and I'd watch the Ronda Rousey Nia Jax match. Those are both really good.
Also, yeah. Very interesting.
One last thing I'll point out in wrestling this week, if you haven't listened to it, get on Spotify. And when you're done listening to everything the Turbo Mansion has ever done, because I know that's what you do when you get on Spotify, that you should also go listen to a new song by the band The Mountain Goats. Have you heard this, Tyler?
Oh, is it their Sasha Banks song?
Yeah, the song for Sasha Banks. Mountain Goats are like a indie rock outfit. They're kind of folky.
They're really good. I really enjoy them.
Yeah, they do concept albums. They did an entire album a few years ago called Beat the Champ that is all like old school wrestling songs.
Yep.
And Sasha Banks heard it and was like, where's my song? And they delivered. They finally did a song about Sasha Banks, and it's very, very good. I hope that comes out to it at WrestleMania with them performing. That would be subdued and fun.
I'm now going to become a wrestler just so I can get the Mountain Goats to write a song about me.
yeah, there you go. So should we head to the credits?
I think so.
Yeah.
So let's get on out of here.
What does Turbo Mansion have coming up?
Some things. So we're actually, I don't know when you guys will be listening to this, but on Thursday... Mm-hmm. The 12th, I believe, we will be playing a very important show in Frederick, Maryland that is sponsored by Music and Arts, that is a chain store for selling musical instruments and things like that throughout the country. But we will be playing a show for them in Frederick, Maryland that is basically the Battle of the Bands.
We are going to be
head-to-head with six other bands that they have selected. And if we perform well and they choose us, we could win some cool merch and get some cool advertisements, maybe in some magazines and things like that. So this is super exciting. If you guys are going to be in the area, if any listeners are out in the Frederick, Maryland way, we would love to see you there. And you can find all that like on the internet, on our website and things like that. So
yeah, I'll put a link on our site for that as well. Simultaneously, while you're doing that in New York, I'll be playing my first adult intramural basketball game of the new league I just founded.
Yes,
so come watch that. Come watch that if you want to see me out
point
of shape.
Point guard Caverline, he's coming back.
I hope I don't have to be the point guard for my team. If that's what's going on, then we are in trouble. trying to think I have a new, this is the first year hearing about this too, but I have a new series of columns I'm going to be writing for MuchAdoAboutWrestling.com to kind of be there monthly on weeks maybe that we don't have episodes coming out. So we do a lot of comparisons of wrestling to other art on the show, and I'm going to be writing these articles where people tell me their favorite movie or song or like piece of classic art. They pick a thing that matters to them and they tell me why. And then I write an in-depth article telling them what wrestling match or feud they should watch as a comparison. This is going to be called The Comp Is Here. and the first one is maybe going to be the hardest one because my roommate Dylan, who uses MoviePass more efficiently than anyone I've ever known, gave me the movie Barry Lyndon as his favorite movie. Okay. Barry Lyndon is the Stanley Kubrick movie that you haven't seen, and is a period piece from the 18th century, 19th century, and most of it was lit by candles, the movie.
Wow.
So I'm going to tell you what wrestling match is similar to that, and it's going
to
be fun.
I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, so that will be up sometime next week for your viewing pleasure.
Sweet.
And just the regular old stuff from us. If you want us to answer your questions the next time we're in the Kayfabe 5000, if you want us to guess more matches of what they were rated by Dave.
Yeah, that was fun. I think we could do that again.
Mm-hmm. Submit them to us on our website, muchadoaboutwrestling.com. There's a contact page there. Or you can do it on Twitter at @adowrestling. Or you can email them directly to us at muchadowrestling.com. Or sorry, muchadowrestling@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook group. We're Much Ado About Wrestling there. You can just leave it as like a comment for us. I'm going to put up a link on our website where you can sign up for like a newsletter we're going to kind of start doing as well. So you can give us opinions through that. That is all that I've got for the show.
All righty. That's about it.
So I guess it's time to end the way that we always do. We're going to leave you in the immortal words of the bard William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
Dig it!